Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
Genocides are never declared in advance. But this court has the benefit of the past 13 weeks of evidence that shows incontrovertibly a pattern of conduct and related intention that justifies a plausible claim of genocidal acts.
Is Israel committing genocide in Gaza? That's the question today before the International Court of Justice in The Hague, which has begun 2 days of arguments in South Africa's historic genocide case against Israel. We'll air excerpts and go to Johannesburg and Jerusalem for response. Then, an exclusive new report by The Guardian reveals how carbon emissions from Israel's war on Gaza will have an immense effect on the climate crisis. We'll speak with Guardian reporter Nina Lakhani and Hadil Ikhmaiz, head of the Climate Change Office at the Palestinian Environmental Quality Authority.
There are three predicted scenarios for the climate in Palestine, and all the three scenarios predicted that the change of climate is going to be unprecedented and endangerly and negatively impacted the water security and food security. With occupation, it exacerbates the problem of climate change and make it worse for the future generations.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The International Court of Justice in The Hague has begun hearing 2 days of arguments in South Africa's historic genocide case against Israel. South Africa's accused Israel of violating the 1948 UN Genocide Convention, saying its three-month assault on Gaza is being conducted with the intent to bring about the destruction of Palestinians as a group. South Africa is outlining its case today. Israel will defend itself on Friday. During today's hearing, attorneys for the South African government laid out what they described as Israel's genocidal intent.
Israel has a genocidal intent against the Palestinians in Gaza. That is evident from the way in which Israel's military attack is being conducted. Israel's special genocidal intent is rooted in the belief that, in fact, the enemy is not just the military wing of Hamas, or indeed Hamas generally, but is embedded in the fabric of Palestinian life in Gaza.
We'll have more on the genocide hearing after headlines. An Israeli airstrike hit an ambulance in central Gaza Wednesday, killing two patients and four members of the Palestine Red Crescent Society. The aid group said, quote, "Our colleagues were intentionally targeted while inside an ambulance clearly marked with the Red Crescent emblem," unquote. Another Israeli attack near the entrance to the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital killed eight people and wounded over 30. On Wednesday, the head of the World Health Organization, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, called on Israel to allow more aid into Gaza.
Delivering humanitarian aid in Gaza continues to face nearly insurmountable challenges. Intense bombardment, restrictions on movement, fuel shortages, and interrupted communications make it impossible for WHO and our partners to reach those in need. We have the supplies, the teams, and the plans in place. What we don't have is access.
Five armed men wearing military uniforms have reportedly seized an oil tanker in the Gulf of Oman. This comes as tensions have been soaring for weeks in the Red Sea. On Wednesday, the UN Security Council passed a resolution calling for Yemen's Houthi forces to stop attacking ships in the Red Sea. The vote came a day after U.S. and British forces shot down 21 drones and missiles fired by the Houthis, who vowed to continue attacks until Israel halts its assault on Gaza. Former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis squared off at a CNN-hosted debate in Iowa ahead of the state's January 15th caucus. Republican frontrunner Donald Trump, who's yet to participate in a primary debate, had been invited to attend but opted to take part in a Fox News town hall instead. DeSantis criticized Haley for supporting sending more money and arms to Ukraine.
She supports this $106 billion that they're trying to get through Congress. Where's some of that money going? They've done tens of billions of dollars to pay salaries for Ukrainian government bureaucrats. They've paid pensions for Ukrainian retirees with your tax dollars. We've got homeless veterans. We have all these problems. This is the UN way of thinking, that we're somehow globalists and we have unlimited resources to do. You know, I think here's the problem. You can take the ambassador out of the United Nations, but you can't take the United Nations out of the ambassador.
Nikki Haley questioned Ron DeSantis about whether he's ready to run the country.
The best way to tell about a candidate is to see how they've run their campaign. He has blown through $150 million. I don't even know how you do that. Through his campaign, he has nothing to show for it. He spent more money on private planes than he has on commercials trying to get Iowans to vote for him. If you can't manage a campaign, how are you going to manage a country?
Hours before the debate, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie dropped out of the race. He was caught on a hot mic saying she's going to get smoked in an apparent reference to Haley. Christie also predicted DeSantis would drop out after Iowa. In other Trump news, closing arguments are scheduled for today in New York in the civil fraud case brought by New York Attorney General Letitia James against Donald Trump. On Wednesday, the judge in the case struck down a request by Trump to deliver his own closing statement because the former president's legal team refused to abide by the judge's restrictions not to turn his remarks into a campaign speech. On Capitol Hill, far-right Republicans are pushing back against House Speaker Mike Johnson after he reached a bipartisan $1.59 trillion spending deal with Democratic Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. On Wednesday, a dozen members of the House Freedom Caucus joined Democrats to block an unrelated bill to show their opposition to Johnson's deal. Meanwhile, a pair of House committees have voted to endorse a report recommending Hunter Biden, President Biden's son, be held in contempt of Congress. On Wednesday, Hunter Biden made a surprise appearance at a House Oversight Committee meeting and offered to testify publicly. But Republicans refuse. They've been insisting on questioning him in private. In other House news, Republican lawmakers held their first impeachment hearing focused on Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas. In Ecuador, police have arrested at least 333 people in a nationwide crackdown after President Daniel Noboa declared a state of emergency due to a surge in violence by drug cartels. During an interview Wednesday, Noboa said Ecuador is now in a state of war. Schools across Ecuador will remain shut down until at least Friday. Authorities in South Korea have confirmed the recent stabbing of opposition leader Lee Jae-myung was a politically motivated attack. Lee Jae-myung, who survived the assassination attempt, ran for president in 2022 and narrowly lost to conservative Yoon Suk-yeol. Police said the attacker wanted to prevent him from running for president again in 2027. This is Busan Police Commissioner Woo Chul-mun.
The suspect stated that he held a grudge that the victim, Lee Jae-myung, was not properly punished, and he wanted to prevent the victim from becoming president, stop him from giving nominations to certain groups, and taking a majority of seats in the upcoming general election. That is why he decided to kill the victim.
In health news, wastewater testing shows the U.S. is in its greatest COVID-19 surge since Omicron, making it the second largest surge of the pandemic. Around 1,500 people in the U.S. are still dying from COVID every week. Public health experts say two of the main reasons are waning immunity and not enough people accessing treatments and vaccinations. Rates of infection are up globally as well. The World Health Organization reports 10,000 COVID deaths were recorded in December, while hospitalizations increase in dozens of countries. In Spain, authorities have reissued face mask mandates in health facilities.
It's a basic and minimum measure which we learned from the pandemic, and that is, when we have an upward trend, the first thing we need to do is protect the most vulnerable people, people who have some sort of infection that needs to be contained, and the method that is most scientifically endorsed is the mask.
In Ohio, Republican House legislators voted Wednesday to overturn Republican Governor Mike DeWine's veto of legislation that would ban gender-affirming health care for transgender youth and bar trans athletes from playing on school sports teams. Three-fifths of the Ohio Senate must also vote to override DeWine's veto for the bill to become law. The ACLU of Ohio slammed state Republicans, saying, quote, "This state-sponsored vendetta against some of Ohio's most vulnerable young people is beyond cruel," they said. In related news, two transgender women vying for seats in the Ohio House of Representatives have been challenged for not disclosing their birth names on nominating petitions. Both women said they were unaware of the rule, but that they would have complied despite the harmful nature of the requirement. One of the women, Ariane Childry, said of the rule, quote, "Having to use your dead name is horrible. It's an attack on who we are," unquote. Vanessa Joy, who's appealing the decision last week to disqualify her, also warned that transgender people should not be forced to share their dead names due to safety concerns. Here in New York, lawsuits filed by prisoners at the Great Meadow Correctional Facility accuse guards of abuse and torture. Two men, 44-year-old Charles Wright and 32-year-old Eugene Taylor, say they were brutally beaten by guards who also took them to another facility where they were waterboarded. Both men say they were falsely accused of disciplinary infractions after the event. A separate lawsuit filed by 44 prisoners says guards inflicted physical and psychological abuse on prisoners during an October lockdown, including violently attacking them. Great Meadow Prison is located in Comstock, about 200 miles north of New York City. In North Carolina, Ronnie Long was awarded an historic $25 million settlement for his wrongful conviction and 44-year-long imprisonment. Long is a black man. He was accused of raping a white woman by an all-white jury in 1976. He was exonerated and released in 2020 after a court ruled his due process rights were violated, citing extreme and continuous police misconduct, which included concealing lab evidence that showed Long was not linked to the crime scene. Ronnie Long has put some funds from a previous settlement towards efforts to reform the criminal justice system. And the family of the late Eddie Bernice Johnson, the trailblazing black congressmember from Texas, has blamed a Dallas rehabilitation facility for her death and say they'll file a lawsuit for net medical neglect. Her family says the spine infection that led to her death December 31st developed following back surgery after staff at the Baylor Scott and White Institute left her lying in her own feces. Eddie Bernice Johnson was the first registered nurse elected to Congress, where she served for three decades. On Tuesday, loved ones and community members gathered for her funeral at Concord Church in Dallas. Among those who paid their respects were lawmakers who were inspired and guided by Johnson. This is Royce West, Texas State Senator.
What she made certain of is that issues concerning health care, accessible health care, that we worked on those issues, higher education, historically underutilized businesses, building coalitions based on interests, not based on the color of one's skin, gender, or political affiliation. And she often told us, just because you speak loud, don't mean you're going to be able to get anything done. Her life is a manifestation of that.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. South Africa has accused Israel of acts of genocide against Palestinians in opening remarks today at a historic hearing at the International Court of Justice in The Hague. At the hearing, South Africa demanded an emergency suspension of Israel's aerial and ground assault on Gaza, which it said was intended at bringing about, quote, the destruction of the population of the territory. In a detailed 84-page document launching the case late last year, South Africa alleged that Israel has demonstrated that intent. The International Court of Justice is hearing South Africa's arguments today and will hear Israel's response to the allegations on Friday. South Africa's Justice Minister, Ronald Lamola, addressed the court at the opening of the hearing.
Madam President and distinguished members of the court, it is an honor for me to stand here in front of you on behalf of the Republic of South Africa on this exceptional case. In extending our hands across the miles to the people of Palestine, we do so in full knowledge that we are part of a humanity that is at one. These were the words of our founding president, Nelson Mandela. This is the spirit in which South Africa acceded to the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of Crime of Genocide in 1998. This is the spirit in which we approach this court as a contracting party to the Convention. This is a commitment we owe to the people of Palestine and Israelis alike. As previously mentioned, the violence and the destruction in Palestine and Israel did not begin on the 7th of October 2023. The Palestinians have experienced systematic oppression and violence for the last 76 years.
That was South Africa's Justice Minister Ronald Lamola addressing the court at the opening of the hearing. South African lawyer Adila Hassem was next. She began by citing Israel's bombing campaign in Gaza in her opening argument.
For the past 96 days, Israel has subjected Gaza to what has been described as one of the heaviest conventional bombing campaigns in the history of modern warfare. Palestinians in Gaza are being killed by Israeli weaponry and bombs from air, land, and sea. They are also at immediate risk of death by starvation, dehydration, and disease as a result of the ongoing siege by Israel, the destruction of Palestinian towns, the insufficient aid being allowed through to the Palestinian population, and the impossibility of distributing this limited aid while bombs fall. This conduct renders essentials to life unobtainable.
South African lawyer Adila Hassem continued by laying out what South Africa says was a series of genocidal acts, including mass killing, displacement, denial of humanitarian aid, and more. She began on the mass killing of Palestinians in Gaza.
The first genocidal act committed by Israel is the mass killing of Palestinians in Gaza, in violation of Article 2A of the Genocide Convention. As the UN Secretary General explained 5 weeks ago, the level of Israel's killing is so extensive that nowhere is safe in Gaza. As I stand before you today, 23,210 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli forces during the sustained attacks over the last 3 months, at least 70% of whom are believed to be women and children. Some 7,000 Palestinians are still missing, presumed dead under the rubble. Palestinians in Gaza are subjected to relentless bombing wherever they go. They are killed in their homes, in places where they seek shelter, in hospitals, in schools, in mosques, in churches, and as they try to find food and water for their families. They have been killed if they failed to evacuate in the places to which they have fled, and even while they attempted to flee along Israeli-declared safe routes. The level of killing is so extensive that those whose bodies are found are buried in mass graves, often unidentified. In the first 3 weeks alone, following 7 October, Israel deployed 6,000 bombs per week, at least 200 times it has deployed 2,000-pound bombs in southern areas of Palestine designated as safe. These bombs have also decimated the north, including refugee camps. 2,000-pound bombs are some of the biggest and most destructive bombs available. They are dropped by lethal fighter jets that are used to strike targets on the ground by one of the world's most resourced armies.
South African lawyer Adila Hassan concluded her remarks by outlining the need for an emergency suspension of Israel's assault on Gaza.
All of these acts, individually and collectively, form a calculated pattern of conduct by Israel, indicating a genocidal intent. This intent is evident from Israel's conduct in specially targeting Palestinians living in Gaza, using weaponry that causes large-scale homicidal destruction, as well as targeted sniping of civilians, designating safe zones for Palestinians to seek refuge, and then bombing these, depriving Palestinians in Gaza of basic needs, food, water, healthcare, fuel, sanitation, and communications, destroying social infrastructure, homes, schools, mosques, churches, hospitals, and killing, seriously injuring, and leaving large numbers of children orphaned. Genocides are never declared in advance. But this court has the benefit of the past 13 weeks of evidence that shows incontrovertibly a pattern of conduct and related intention that justifies a plausible claim of genocidal acts. In the Gambia-Myanmar case, this court did not hesitate to impose provisional measures in relation to allegations that Myanmar was committing genocidal acts against the Rohingya within the Rakhine state. The facts before the court today are sadly even more stark, and like the Gambia-Myanmar case, deserve and demand this court's intervention. Every day, there is mounting irreparable loss of life, property, dignity, and humanity for the Palestinian people. Our news feeds show graphic images of suffering that has become unbearable to watch. Nothing will stop the suffering except an order from this court. Without an indication of provisional measures, the atrocities will continue, with the Israeli Defense Force indicating that it intends pursuing this course of action for at least a year.
South African lawyer Adila Hassan. She was followed by attorney Thembeka Ngokaitobi, who outlined what South Africa said was clear evidence of genocidal intent by Israel.
The intentional failure of the government of Israel to condemn, prevent, and punish such genocidal incitement constitutes in itself a grave violation of the Genocide Convention. We should recall, Madam President, that in Article 1 of the Convention, Israel confirmed that genocide, whether committed in time of peace or in time of war is a crime under international law, and it undertook to prevent and to punish it as such. This failure to prevent, condemn, and punish such speech by the government has served to normalize genocidal rhetoric and extreme danger for Palestinians within Israeli society. As M.K. Moshe Sada from the Likud party has said, the government's own attorneys share his views that Palestinians in Gaza must be destroyed. I quote, "You go anywhere and they tell you to destroy them. In the kibbutz, they tell you to destroy them. My friends at the state attorney's office who fought with me on political issues in debate said to me, it is clear that we need to destroy all Gazans." Destroy all Gazans. Israel is aware of its destruction of Palestinian life and infrastructure. Despite this knowledge, it has maintained and indeed intensified its military activity in Gaza.
Excerpts from South Africa's arguments at the historic hearing at the International Court of Justice in The Hague, accusing Israel of acts of genocide. When we come back, we go to Johannesburg and Jerusalem for response.
When all the dark clouds roll away, the sun begins to shine, I see my freedom from across the way, and it comes right in on time. When it shines,
the South African singer Miriam Makeba. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
We're joined now by two guests to discuss South Africa's historic genocide case against Israel at the International Court of Justice in The Hague. Today marked the first hearing out of 2 days of arguments, with South Africa outlining its case that Israel has violated the 1948 UN Genocide Convention, saying its three-month assault on Gaza is being conducted with the intent to bring about the destruction of Palestinians as a group.
In Jerusalem, Maha Abdallah is a Palestinian genocide scholar, a graduate teaching assistant and PhD researcher at the Faculty of Law at the University of Antwerp. And joining us from Johannesburg, South Africa, Kajo Ramjaatan Keo, South African human rights lawyer, directs the Africa program of the International Commission of Jurists, which is dedicated to defending human rights and the rule of law worldwide. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Let's begin in South Africa with Kajo. If you could start off by talking about the significance of today's hearing that finished just before we went to air. What is the International Court of Justice? How unusual is it to bring a kind of case like this? If you could take it from there.
Yes, sure. Hi, everybody. So to talk about the hearing and the International Court of Justice, the International Court of Justice is a world court which adjudicates issues and cases between states. So it is different from the International Criminal Court in that way, where the ICC would prosecute individuals on international criminal concerns. The International Court of Justice only deals with issues between state parties. And this is the reason why South Africa has filed this case before the International Court of Justice. And it was It was a pretty remarkable hearing. You've said already about the historical significance of this hearing. There have been previous cases at the International Court of Justice dealing with genocide, but those previous cases have not attracted as much attention and interest as this particular case.
So, Kajal, could you explain how often it's been the case that a case has been brought to the